This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world.
We've got quite a show today, but before we go there, I'd like to let you know that we've got signed books in the unknowncountry.com store now. My books are Communion, The Fourth Mind, Them, Jesus, A New Vision, The Key, and Hidden Garden, my poetry book. So if you'd like a signed book, go to unknowncountry.com and order through our website, and you'll get one very shortly. I also noticed that I'm wearing a T-shirt that I was given by friends who know me all too well. I usually don't wear it on the show, but it's ended up here, and I recorded the whole show with it. So, yes, I am a workaholic. I mean, anyone who's been doing a show like this for 27 years, writing, 10 books during that period of time, doing all kinds of travel and all kinds of things like that, is definitely a workaholic. And no, I have no intention of retiring. I can't imagine retiring. My work and my life are the same thing. Today, we are going down an interesting path. We've been down it before over the years. You've been down it too, and I'm sure in different ways. It's about out-of-body travel. 2 weeks ago, we had a show that appeared to me to involve a communication from a long-dead author, Mac Tonnies, requesting that his book, The Crypto-Terrestrials, be given another look. It's an amazing show, so if you haven't watched it, do that. Then last week, we went a little farther down that path with Chris Carter talking about afterlife in a way that it's usually not talked about. Usually there are stories and so forth, but not many people with a very serious scientific background go into it. He did. And this show is all about empowerment. So this week's author is the same. Samantha Treasure grew up on a farm in Ontario, Canada. She grew up in a house, as you will see and hear, where there were a lot of ghost sightings. She became interested in OBEs after her brother had one. She's got a BSc in social sciences, an MA in medical anthropology, and she is an expert in what's known as cross-cultural research. She has worked in the UK and in South Korea, where she now lives, with people who have had these experiences. So it's quite an extraordinary experience, actually, to talk to Samantha, and I hope you are going to enjoy it. We're going to start, Samantha, with going back to your home in Ontario at the age of 8. Welcome to the show, Samantha Treasure.
So I was 8 years old, and my little brother was 6 years old, and I was playing in the living room, and he was taking a nap on the sofa. And then he just kind of abruptly wakes up, and he's really excited, and he says, "I've just been outside." And he, starts talking about it. And then our mom, so it was kind of open plan into the kitchen. Our mom hears this. She comes in and she goes, "You were just dreaming because you were here the whole time. You didn't go outside." And then he goes, no, I was really outside. I was outside. It wasn't a dream. And he said that when he went outside, he saw our neighbor, Betty, walking towards the house with a cherry cheesecake. And so they were arguing about whether it was a dream or not. And I was just thinking about what cherry cheesecake tasted like, because I'd never tried it before. And then within about 2 minutes, Betty knocked on the door and she had a cherry cheesecake. And I was sitting on the floor playing with my toys the whole time. My brother did not get up and look at the window. And even if he had, he wouldn't have seen the road because it was blocked by a sunroom kind of addition to the house. So I just remember standing there and my mind was blown. I think this was probably Yeah, I don't think any other time in my life my mind had been blown that much to that extent, because I already kind of figured there's something supernatural about the world. There's another side to what
Yes.
this is rather than what our five senses tell us. And because there had been sort of ghost stories and stuff. And interestingly, some people talk about there being a genetic aspect to this. So it might be that certain experiences are more common in certain regions of the world or in certain families. In certain, I know with like people who experience visitors or contact, also often sometimes say a similar thing happened to my mom and my grandmother. And in my family, almost every single person who is descended from my maternal grandfather, who is genetically or ethnically Irish but grew up in Manchester, England, almost everyone who's descended from him has some sort of wild experiences, whether it's sleep paralysis or OBEs or even poltergeist activity. There's a lot. There's a lot. So yeah, I think that there's always been something with my family, but it kind of amplified when we lived in this old Victorian farmhouse in Ontario, which was, it seemed like, I don't know, people would say it was like a portal or something. People would come and stay at our house and experience things. So if I had a sleepover, my friends would experience things, either see things or you'd hear something like fall, and then you'd go into their room and nothing was there, nothing had fallen. People seeing shadow figures and just all sorts of stuff. But then this with the OBEs, it kind of, I was like, well, this is completely different for me, because this is something that I can do. You know, I don't remember exactly what I believed about the astral world, but from my brother's experience, it sounded like I thought of it kind of as an X-ray vision. And it could be quite useful, right? Like you, people think that you're in one room, but you can see what's going on somewhere else. So I thought, okay, I need to learn how to do this. And we had no internet back then. This was like the 90s.
How old were you at this point when you were deciding to learn?
I was 8 years old.
Eight.
Yeah.
My goodness. Amazing. Okay, well, do tell.
So we lived, the nearest library was about 20 miles away in the biggest town in the county. So anytime we would go into town, I would ask my mom, like, can you take me to the library? And I would just try to find, I had no word for this. So I just tried to look in different books, you know, history, geography, all sorts of things, to try to find out what this was. And then I found the section on mystical experiences, and I found, you know, those old like big black Time Life books, the series. And there was a book, I think it's called Soul Journeys or something like that. And I think there were other books too. And I can't recall, I would have to kind of look, try to see what books they had then, but I can't recall exactly the technique I used when I was a kid. But every about year, every year or so, I would become obsessed with this experience again. And I would spend days or weeks every night trying these techniques.
At that
So, sorry?
age. At that age, and of course you would become good at it if you started so early.
No.
No?
No. That would
I
have,
had a
you
feeling
know,
that would be the answer.
I think like, oh, that would be great. That would have been great. But then I don't know if it would have, because it can be difficult sometimes. So I won't go into detail. I might maybe talk or write about this later at some point. But when I was 14, I kind of briefly mentioned this in the book, that I did have an experience that I later recognized as an OBE. So it seemed to take me that long. So I did, I think it might have been the techniques that created this weird Alice in Wonderland syndrome that I would get. Before I went to bed, like I would feel like my body was very thick, like almost like a worm or like concrete or something. And most people that get Alice in Wonderland syndrome, they feel taller or shorter, and sometimes it can kind of change, over seconds or whatever. But I didn't know what it was until just a few years ago. But I think that doing the techniques, possibly because of my age, I'm not sure, might have triggered this instead of an OBE. I did actually have an out of arm experience, so I felt my arm out of my arm, but not my full body, and that was very strange.
Well, you know something, when you're working with people with second body, one of the secrets is it's pretty easy to get the arms out, much harder to get the rest of the body out. And so when I'm working with a group, for example, and we're all on Zoom together, I will get the group to concentrate on on lifting their second body arms. And they, people who are do this often can touch each other that way. Quite
Oh, that's
amazing.
interesting.
Across Zoom.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's one of the secrets. So folks, now you know one of the secrets. You can get your arms out much more easily than you can the rest of you. So bear that
Oh.
in mind. Samantha, you where let me ask you this. You started trying to do this for years. You started at the age of eight. And when did you first actually have some success at it?
Okay, so I had the experience when I was 14. I didn't recognize it as an OBE at the time. I thought that it was just like an apparition experience.
Well, wait a minute. Let me rephrase the question.
Okay.
You were Alison, maybe we better start this question again a little differently.
Okay.
Alice in Wonderland syndrome. Can you start by explaining that? And this was happening to you at the age of 14. Can
This
you?
was happening to me earlier, so I asked my mom too, how old was I when this started, because I was trying to figure out if it was from age 8 onwards, it might have been due to these astral projection techniques that I was
Right.
doing. If it
Now
started earlier,
it's a recognized phenomenon
yes.
in psychiatry and psychology. So
Yes.
can you tell us exactly what the scientific view of this is?
So it normally happens in children, especially when you have fever, or children with like migraines or epilepsy. It can happen with adults as well. And it's usually happens at bedtime. So you feel your body kind of getting bigger or smaller or wider or thinner. In my case, it was like thicker. And they think that it has something to do with the body schema and the body image, which is relevant to out-of-body experiences and all kind of relevant to body dysmorphia and all kind of like bodily phenomena. So the body image is what we think our body looks like the size of it and its place, in the environment. And the body schema is related to like a network in our brain of how we can reach out and grab something. So we know how big our body is and where it is in the environment and how it can. So it's basically relevant to how we steer our physical body in the physical environment.
I see.
And sometimes when there's fever or something, like lots of different things can kind of cause an incongruence between the two, and you can kind of switch into a different body schema, or it can kind of get confused, and it's basically classed as a hallucination, the Alice in
Yeah.
Wonderland system, as is the OBE, but it's
Right,
just
of
that
course.
weird thing, unexplained things can happen during that hallucination as well.
We have been building a cultural fortress around the physical world. We've been turning it into a prison, and which is extremely, it's a disaster. But if you look back into history, there was another disaster that we endured for, in the Western world at least, for 1,000 years, which is the disaster of the religious dictatorship. And that was a disaster too. So we've flipped from one disaster to another. We've got to figure out a way to not live in that state.
But
before we do that, folks, and we will do it, we have to stop for a moment and take a break for the free side and watch these commercials and do what we say, because it's really worth doing. We'll be right back. Have you ever read Communion? Or have you never read Communion? It's out in a new edition. Very powerful, a subtly new cover that reflects the fact that the visitors are now looking back at us, because they truly are. You can get it from the unknowncountry.com store as a Kindle, as a beautiful, sumptuous paperback, or as an unabridged audiobook read by me. It's the first time in the whole life of Communion that it has been read in full in audio format. And believe you me, I felt that reading. I put my life, my memories into it. And I trust you can hear it in the voice. I sure felt it while I was reading. So get Communion. Listen to it. Read it. Communion is of central importance to all of our lives. Where is the unknown country? Is it out there in the stars? Or is it also somewhere else? Is it in us, in you? Unknown country, join us today. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and join us. Join the questions. Join the search. Join the adventure. Unknowncountry.com. There's no place like it in the world. We're talking to Samantha Treasure. Her book, Out of Body Experiences, is available on Amazon and probably in bookstores, and certainly from the unknowncountry.com store, where you can also get signed copies of my books. And it is very well worth your time, because unlike the books that concentrate just on technique and are not empowering for that reason, because, or the Monroe material, which is so wonderful. I knew Bob Monroe a little bit anyway. But you need, in the Western world, you need some kind of empowering basis. And this is a highly empowering book. Samantha, tell me about why did you do this? You want other people to be able to do OBEs, obviously. Is that your primary motive in writing?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would say I don't promote OBEs. Some people, especially people who are making money off of this and they're kind of growing, they say that everybody should be having an OBE. And I disagree with that. I think that everyone has to choose what feels right to them. And maybe it's not on everybody's path, and that's okay. And it doesn't make it more or less valuable than having an OBE. There's so many different types of altered state experiences or mystical experiences that are, I would say, like, they can be just as valuable as the OBE. So what I wanted to do was, I was kind of frustrated by the marketing side of it, saying everyone should have this, because I'd spoken to people who had an OBE and it didn't have a good effect on their life. It made them very fearful And, you know, there's ways that you can kind of work with that and integrate your experience. But I just feel like if you kind of let like, say if you say this is a technique everyone can use, which I don't think it exists. It depends on the person, but if everyone started to have OBEs, in my experience, a lot of people would become very egotistical. Some people would use them to spy on others or try to gain power. It's just the nature of humanity. Like, not everyone has the best intentions.
Right.
And I don't think having like an amazing OBE can necessarily make you a good person. Sometimes I've talked to people who they say that it made them a worse person, that they started to treat others who couldn't do it with disdain, like they were better than them and they were using them and doing all sorts of things. So I wrote this book because I wanted to show that there's a huge variety of ways that you can have the experience, ways that you can kind of approach it and interpret it and act within the experience, and ways that you can integrate the experience, whether it's in a scientific way or spiritual or religious way. So I spoke to people like I spoke to contactees in 2015 for a year. And I did some field work with Ekankar, a new religious movement. And one of their core practices is soul travel, and, interviewed shamans and witches and people from all walks of life, because I was frustrated with people pushing a certain narrative, which is generally a New Age narrative. And there's nothing wrong with New Age. I think New Age people who follow the New Age are lovely in general, but there's a tendency that if anyone has a negative experience, it's due to having a low vibration themselves. Whereas I didn't find that actually in my research. It seemed to be more like random or incidental.
You know, that, I agree with you. I had an experience with a lady who was a very big New Ager, and I was with her and the daughters of a friend who had just died of cancer. And this lady said that it was her fault that she had had cancer. And I thought to myself, there's something very wrong there.
Yeah.
Something very wrong.
Yeah.
And so I'm quite wary of that movement. I mm-hmm. need, you know, when people want to be on my show and they're channeling this and channeling that, I'm very hesitant. I don't usually have that.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why we're exploring it. But mm-hmm. so you've had this journey. When have you tell us a little bit about your own OBEs and what you mm-hmm. have experienced with this? Because you must have had some, and at the end of the show we'll talk more deeply about this, but tell mm-hmm. us about some of the experiences that convinced you on a personal level that this was real.
Well, define real. So
okay, that's a path we can go down eventually, but
okay.
I have another friend, Riz Virk, who will argue that there
is yeah, I know him.
Real.
You
might know Riz's work. He's the he's the master of simulation theory.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's another story. We won't define real. But yeah, let's see. Let's go way back to the age of 8. Your brother mm-hmm. leaves his body. He mm-hmm. sees someone coming down the street, who does show up at the house shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
Define real in the context of that experience.
Right. Because I think this is what most people think, or what most people are thinking when they say real in the context of an OBE, that the OBE space and what you see reflects what's actually there in the physical world, which isn't always the case. But I would say that seeing something like that, like my neighbor with the cherry cheesecake, that shows that it's real in the sense that we can use it. It's kind of like the back rooms of reality. So I spoke with Rizwan Virk as well about the simulation theory and about OBEs and everything, because with my OBEs, I eventually started to come to the conclusion that, you know, maybe there's some sort of simulation reality involved, whether or not it's to do with computers. So even Rizwan thinks it could, it might not be computer based. It could be something that we have no concept for, but reality might work in a similar way to a simulation. And the OBE is kind of like the back rooms. You know, you're kind of going into the code of reality and seeing what's there. And scientifically speaking, what you're seeing in an OBE is based on spatial memories. So it's kind of a placeholder. And I think of it as like cache files, you know, in a computer on the internet. So you visit a website and you're connected to the internet and you can click on links and everything. And then you have cache, the computer has cache files of that website. So even if you're online, offline, sorry, you can go into the website and you can see the website, but it's not actually the live version of your five senses or of the live internet. So you're just seeing the cache files, the kind of storage, memory storage in your brain. But that doesn't explain all the weird things that can happen too. Like there seems to be meetings that can take place. And I listened to some of your podcasts where you mentioned that sometimes the visitors can take you out of body by stimulating the back of the neck, which is interesting because I mentioned this in the book that this is one of the mysteries for me. Why is it that some people experience like vibrations or an exit from certain parts of their body, which is fascinating to me. And then you mentioned also that you think that the orbs are us, which I came to the same conclusion too, because with OBEs, when you're in an OBE, sometimes you're like an orb. You feel like you're an orb and you're just moving around like a floating camera or something. And then sometimes you seem to have this other double body. You mentioned, so you wanted to hear about some of my out-of-body experiences that made it real.
Yeah, that made it seem real to you.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm going to have to get Riz back on the show. And I've had him on a number of times. He's a good friend, and we've never actually discussed this, but I want to discuss it with him because, you know, it's a really interesting question. And, you know, when you were talking and describing this, I thought to myself, you know, if this is a simulation, then we are the pieces on the board. We are not the simulators. Therefore, we are not going to be able to figure out how this simulation works. And I'm haunted by my wife's, one of the first things she said after my listeners know all about this, Samantha, you may not, and that's fine. I don't want to go down this road very far, but she said, one of the first things she said after she very skillfully returned after death, improvably, in fact. She said, "Whitley, it's a game." And I said, "What do you mean a game?" She said, and my implication was, is it sort of, you know, like people just fooling around with our lives? And she said, "It's a serious game."
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that resonates.
And I think you're onto something. I think you're real close to this game. And you're close to the edge of the board, and you're looking, you're like in Charles Fort, you're the beast at the edge of the field looking through the fence.
Maybe that's why my experiences stopped. So not the all OBEs, but a certain type of experience that I was having. I'll just kind of quickly describe my OBEs and then get to this one specific type that I started to have. Okay, so the first one I had when I was 14, I woke up in the middle of the night and everything in the room was like blue, as if I was wearing blue tinted shades. And I sort of turned on my side and I saw someone sitting in my bed. And then they sort of realized I was awake and looked at me, and I tried to touch them and they disappeared. And the reason why I now think that was an OBE is once I started to have them more regularly, some of them were like bluish, it would be like this bluishness. And I also had this great sense of peace, which I never had in that house because it was so haunted. I mean, anyone that slept over there would say there's like, I saw an arm floating through your room going out the window or something. I saw a shadow person in the doorway and like all these things. One girl actually woke up in the middle of the night screaming and wouldn't say why. And just my mom had to call her mom to come get her. So I would sleep with the covers tucked in over my head every single night with a little like oxygen tent. And I would always stay like that until the morning. But on this particular night, my covers were like folded very neatly across my chest as if somebody had come in and like tucked me in, which, you know, my parents wouldn't do, or what I would, I had my system, right? And then even if I woke up in the middle of the night in my little cocoon, I would still be absolutely terrified because I would think, okay, now I'm going to start hearing the footsteps up the stairs, which others heard as well. And it would always stop halfway up the stairs. Nobody knows why. So there were this kind of sense of peace and almost like floatiness is also very common to OBEs. And going forward, I had another kind of brief similar experience where I was kind of crawling. I saw my cat who had just disappeared a week before. And I seemed to see the house a week in the future because my family was moving and they hadn't packed everything, but I saw everything in boxes in my experience. But then it wasn't until I was 26, that's when I started to have lots and lots of OBEs frequently. It's like I unlocked something. I feel like I programmed my brain.
When you say unlocked something, can we unpack that a little bit? What does that mean to you, the word unlocked?
Yeah. Sure. So I think about this a lot because remember, since I was 8 years old, I've been trying to have OBEs. So why did it take me so long? And there were times where I got really close, where I would start to get the vibrations or I'd start to feel like things kind of, I once felt someone holding my hand. And but I think it was the fact that my schedule was very flexible at the time. I feel like to start to have this experience, you need to have kind of training wheels. You need to have the right kind of environment for it. And then once you start to get going, you can kind of take off the training wheels and you get used to it and you kind of program yourself. It just starts to automatically happen. So I think I was in the right, I had the right training wheels. I had a flexible schedule. I worked evenings and I could sleep in. I was studying at university, but it was the open university, so I could make my own schedule. And so I was able to do this practice at night and then sleep in, and nobody was bothering me to go to school or go to work or anything like that. So I think I just felt very comfortable and that I had the capacity to do this. So I was trying Robert Monroe's technique from his first book, which we'll talk specifically about techniques later. But I was trying every night for 2 weeks and it didn't work. So on the final night, I just kind of gave up and I went to sleep as normal. And suddenly I like woke up downstairs in the hall and I was trying to work out how I got there. And I go into this like sort of in more detail in the book, but basically I was trying to work it out and I decided I'm just going to go back to sleep. But as I touched the banister, I just got this really strange feeling of a presence, like there was a presence upstairs. And now I think that presence might have been me, my body. I'm not sure, but I had this kind of weird feeling like this is definitely my home, but something feels off. And my body actually felt warm. And again, very floaty and like comfortable. And it was the middle of winter and the house was like freezing. It shouldn't have been warm. And there was also the bluishness again, too. Everything seemed cast in this beautiful blue hue. So I woke up I went to go wake up my flatmate, but he wasn't in the room. And that's when, first of all, I thought, I'm in somebody else's flat by accident. And then I thought, no, that's impossible. And I see my flatmate's gym bag on the floor. And he worked in a Japanese bank. And I think he had quite a good position too. And I thought, okay, there's three men in the room. And I thought, I think I'm awake this whole time. And I start to think that they've kidnapped my flatmate for ransom or whatever people do with you know, bank employees. And I said something like, well, where did, you know, what have you done with him? And there was two guys at the door looking out at the balcony, and they kind of looked at me and glanced at me and then just seemed really uninterested and looked back out the window. And then there was a guy sitting on the bed who just kind of laughed at me, like in a really unkind way. And I started to leave, and he got up and grabbed my arm. And that's when I started to get these vibrations that usually happen before an OBE, like as you're coming out. But this happened at the end of it, and my ears popped like when you are in a plane and it lands. So then suddenly I was just like awake in bed, wondering what in the hell had just happened. And then I started to have like lots of OBEs. And a lot of times I would have this experience where I would just separate from my body and I'd be in my bedroom. And I kind of float around. I never wanted to look at my body because I thought that I would freak out. So I tried to avoid that. And I was also scared to maybe see other entities. So sometimes I would kind of keep my eyes closed. Not sure how that works, but you kind of keep your astral body eyes closed until I felt like I was away outside of my bedroom. Because I eventually switched, for some reason, switched rooms with my flatmate, I think because it was warmer. And so I ended up in that room where those three intruders were, and I didn't want to see anything like that.
When you say intruders, can you expand on what that was like and what they weren't actual physical intruders.
Well, I thought the whole time that this happened, I thought that they were. I thought that I was in my physical body, and I'd never sleepwalked before, but I thought maybe that's what happened. I just didn't know what this was, but it wasn't like a lucid dream or anything like that. It was just, I just thought the whole time, I just thought I'm awake. So I thought that these were intruders that had somehow like kidnapped or done something to my flatmate.
Yeah, that's what I thought you'd said. And it's a little hard to tell, but they weren't. They were something else.
Yeah, I mean, they looked like normal men, normal human men. And I never told my flatmate the story because he, you know, would think I was crazy.
But they didn't. Did they disappear? What happened to them?
No, they didn't. So when the one was holding my arm, the more I tried to get away, the more these vibrations would get stronger, and the more this kind of ear popping would get stronger. And then suddenly I was just like that. I was in bed awake. And it wasn't like when you normally wake up from a dream and you're kind of groggy and you know, there's this gradual process. It was just like that. And that's what a lot of people say about OBEs, is that you can come back to your body, like, you know, as your astral body to your physical body and kind of come back in. A lot of times you just snap back and you're just awake.
Yeah, I've had both things happen. My first OBE, I couldn't get back in. The interior of my body was slippery. It was like, it looked like silver, like mercury or something. And I kept sort of dripping out of it and dripping down the bedside. And I thought, my God, I've fooled around with Bob Monroe's book too much, and now I've killed myself. And Anne's going to wake up beside a mysteriously dead body or woman. And I'm trying hard to get back in because, you know, I have a life to live. And I was only like 45 or 44 at the time. And the next thing I know, I'm suddenly in the world of the dead. And I know this because I'm with my father. My father is mowing the lawn. And he looks back over at me and he says, "When are you going to come help me?" And I hated that, more mowing that lawn more than anything in the world. And he used to go out and mow it in order to shame me because I wouldn't do it. So as soon as I heard that, "When are you going to come help me?" and I saw him mowing the lawn, bang, I was back in my body instantly.
Wow. That's interesting. Some OBEs also, it can seem like you're in the past or in the future. So I've had some with, so
well, yeah,
to go back to like what is real, Right.
Yeah. Okay. It's a wonderful conversation because we've been kind of circling that what is real.
Yeah.
Now, are we going to be talking about the future Tokyo stuff? Or now, is that where you're going?
Yeah. Well, first, I'll
Well,
tell
you
you
go where you
something
want to go.
that
You go where you want to go.
I'll tell you something that I didn't put in the book. So I have a chapter on veridical experiences, you know, experiences where you get evidence later that that thing did happen or that thing is in that place, that sort of thing that you couldn't possibly have known, right? And I have a few of those experiences, but I didn't want to make the book too much about me. I just wanted to put enough in there so that people get an idea of like my journey and why I decided to look at certain things and if there was no other example of a certain phenomena, I would put my experience in that this thing can happen. But one thing I think that this is one of my favorite OBEs, I think. So I was living in London and my mom lives in Ireland. And she would move a lot to different towns and different places. And I knew that she was moving that week, but she moved so much I didn't really care about the details because it would always change. So I didn't know if it was a house or an apartment, if she was sharing with someone or not. I didn't know anything about this place. But I had this OBE, which actually started from a lucid dream. So I saw my brother, who was in Canada, and my mom in my mom's kitchen, and they were talking. And I, you know, they could see me and we were talking. And then all of a sudden, you know, I became lucid and I thought, okay, I'm going to use this lucid dream to practice my OBE technique and try to have an OBE because some of the things that happened, like the intruders experience, it would make me kind of scared to have an OBE from my bedroom. So I would use the lucid dream as a kind of testing ground to get over my fear and to hone my technique in that kind of safe way. So I went into the bedroom and I lay down in the bed and I tried my technique. And then I felt myself come out of my dream body. Like layers, kind of like Inception, like different layers. And when I did that, everything was different. It was kind of darker and grainy, and it just felt the environment felt different. It was like I slipped into this different level of the reality, you know, into these back rooms kind of. And I went back into the kitchen, and my mom and my brother were still talking, but now they couldn't see me. They couldn't see me and
They
they couldn't
couldn't
hear
see
me.
you.
Yeah. They couldn't
Oh,
see me and they couldn't
wow.
hear me, which
So
is
you
very
knew
common.
you were not in a normal state.
No. So this is very common with OBEs, which I haven't come
Yeah,
across
I know it is.
with anything else, is that this
But
experience of invisibility.
here's a question for you. Do you suppose we often have OBEs ordinarily and don't know it? Because
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit more deeply in a moment, because
Okay.
right now the free side of this show are going to be listening to something else. We'll be right back.
The Fourth Mind, Whitley Strieber's explosive new book. The first time alien anatomy, alien genetics, the alien brain, and the alien mind have ever been detailed publicly. Learn how they think. Learn what they believe. Learn what we mean to them. Learn when they are coming and why. Then, in part two, learn why we don't have powers like telepathy, levitation, and healing that they do have. Find out about the catastrophe that took our powers from us. Find out how we can regain them. The Fourth Mind, totally new, incredibly important. Get your copy today on Amazon. Available as a Kindle, hardcover, softcover, and an audiobook read by Whitley Strieber.
We're talking to Samantha Treasure, her first time on Dreamland. It's loads of fun, which you're a very good interview, Samantha. Her new book
Thank
is
you.
Out of Body Experiences. And let's go a little bit farther down that road that we were just on a moment ago. I'll let you take it.
Okay. All right. So I'm in the kitchen. My mom and my brother can't see or hear me. And there's all these plants in the kitchen. It's really weird. Like it's just full of plants. So I start to try and move the plants, like the leaves, to get their attention, and it's not working. And so finally, I get tired of this and I go into the hallway. And I notice now, I didn't notice this before at any other point in the experience, but there is this broken plant pot in a grocery bag. And then there's like soil kind of tracked down the hallway. And I'm thinking, my memory is weird now. And I'm thinking, did I do that? Because I was just trying to mess with the plants. Like, did I somehow cause that to break? And then I come out of the experience and it was so vivid and so real that I immediately called my mom. And I told her what happened and she freaked out because she said that she moved to this place. I told her, like, don't tell me anything about it. I'm going to draw like a little blueprint of it. And I'm going to, you know, hand it to you when I come in. And she said that she hadn't had her plants for 5 years. So they were with a friend because she didn't have the room before. But now she had just taken them back and she put all of them in the kitchen until she figured out where to place them. And she said that her puppy had broken one of them. And she was like, oh, I still haven't cleaned it up. It's still there in a grocery bag in the hallway. And the puppy had tracked soil down the hall. So I drew the blueprint of what I'd seen of her apartment. And the next time I went to visit, I held it in my hand as I stepped through the door. And it was exactly the same, except for a couple of details, which again is very common in OBEs. It's often not completely perfect. So one, I saw the bedroom door closer to the front room, the front door, but it was actually a little bit further away, like maybe a meter away or something. And then the second thing was that I saw a door between the living room and the kitchen, but it was actually open plan. And so that was an interesting point, but that made me think, well, okay, because I think it was around the time that I just started university maybe, and I was trying to find like scientific explanations for things. And I was kind of starting to maybe get a bit skeptical of things like, oh, maybe this can all be explained by our memory, our spatial memories. But then this experience was like, no, there's something to do with like telepathy involved. This is connecting us in some way. It's like the astral internet.
Yeah, there is something. There's a level of connection that we're just beginning to explore. Last June, I was at Contact in the Desert here in California, and there was a demonstration of telepathy that was completely undeniable. And there have been other such demonstrations recently in other contexts as well. This is becoming, you know, what's happening is the human species is being born into a new reality. And people like you who are exploring this seriously and not going off down vague paths that we discussed earlier are really in the forefront here. And books like yours, which are so profoundly empowering, they're in the forefront too. She smiles happily, hoping, well, maybe that'll get some sales. And I hope it does. That's
I mean, as you probably know, authors don't make a lot on each book sale, unfortunately.
Oh, no, that's very true. And also, folks, she's got like 6 reviews. Now, a lot of you are capable of writing beautiful reviews. You read this book and give her a review because she needs them. And we do, too, because we're not going to do this unless we get to a critical mass of not belief, but of capability. And it's a different thing. Mm-hmm. Capability, a critical mass of capability where more people are telepathic, more people can do OBEs, more people have provable relationships with our dead. And somewhere along the line, someone figures out who those weirdos who are in the painting behind me are. I mean, I'm not Anne, the other weirdo. Anyway, let's roll on here. Let's, you know, we're sort of in the right space to talk about something you call cultural kindling. Why don't you talk about that concept a little bit that's in the book? And
okay, so that is a concept written about by medical anthropologists Tanya Luhrmann and Julia Cassaniti about, I think, 11 or so years ago. And they acknowledged that all over the world, in different cultures, there's some experiences are more common in some regions or some cultures and others or some groups. And that could be genetic as well. Like some, for example, sleep paralysis is quite common in Southeast Asia, which could be due to genetics that they have there. And there's certain experiences that are very common all over the world. So sleep paralysis is one, dreams are another one, right? But then, for example, there are certain groups of Christians, like in the U.S., who through prayer, through attending to their senses, they can start to hear God. And through attending to other sorts of symptoms or sensations in the body, those sensations start to become more, it's like the threshold to experience them lowers as you put more attention on it. And there's all these different kind of features and things that come together to create this cultural kindling effect, which is biology. So some people could be more biologically susceptible to experiencing certain things, to have like a high absorption, where they can kind of switch mentally from this physical world into kind of an inner world or an alternate world. And practice, so the more you practice something, the more ingrained it becomes, you become conditioned. And then all of these things kind of come together to allow you to experience a certain phenomena and a certain style of the phenomena, depending on your personal history and the practice and so on. So that ties in with out-of-body experiences as well, I think. And I think this is how I kind of programmed myself to have OBEs, because I was doing Robert Monroe's technique, which I guess I'll describe his technique. I think I kind of like over the years kind of tweaked it a little bit to my own sort of style. But you close your eyes and you try to relax each part of your body one by one. When you feel like your muscles are completely relaxed, then you can go on to the next stage, which is you imagine that you're focusing on a point of just a little point, a spot somewhere behind your closed eyes. And then that point goes farther and farther away. And you can even imagine it goes into another galaxy. And as you're doing this, every now and then, you're reminding yourself that your awareness is still within your physical body. So I kind of think of this as almost like a keyboard shortcut, that you're doing two things and you're pressing something else and you're kind of, you know, unlocking a different program kind of pops up. So you're sort of confusing your brain a bit, that you're focusing really hard on something. And you're also reminding yourself that you're embodied. And you're switching between the two. And what I incorporated later was, which I actually got from an OBE. So I heard somebody behind me tell me to do this in an OBE, which was interesting. And they said to move your eyes back and forth. And so I incorporate that into the experience too. And I think what all of that does, because your eyes are closed and your eyes are tired from doing this, it allows you to switch into that other world, because your five senses are no longer reliable enough to present you with reality. So that's what is going on a lot of times when we have an OBE. It's the brain or the body has this kind of backup plan, that if something happens, whether it's through drugs or an accident or meditation, you can switch into this backup model filled with your memories to kind of temporarily fill in that sensorial reality so that you know where you are and you know what's around you, and you can plan, you know, your next move.
One of your chapters talks about OBEs where people want to interact with others but can't. And I've had both kinds of OBE. I've had OBEs where I interacted very extensively with someone. This is in one of my books, I believe, A New World, and my listeners know the story, so I'll just very briefly mention it to you. I ended up in an OBE that was controlled by whoever it was who can touch the back of the neck and draw the second body out that way. And the purpose, part of the purpose of the OBE was to engage with a man who was in this meeting, this conference I was in. It was night and we were all asleep, and to convince him to take better care of his spiritual life. And I did this successfully. And the next morning, of course, he'd seen it and he was telling everybody about what he'd seen. And so that is one thing. And another that is that when you can't be noticed. And my wife, one of the first things in the early part, I was told about one thing she said. One of the things she said that I thought was very important was, it looks like you're all intentionally ignoring us.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of OBE where you can't be seen,
mm-hmm.
and you can't do anything, I think that's like being dead.
Yeah, exactly. It's like being a ghost. You're having the experience of being a ghost. And it's interesting that like this, in the second chapter, I go into the parapsychology of OBEs, especially there's a lot more kind of, there's some recent stuff like from the 70s and 90s and so on, but I kind of focused more on the older stuff because the sort of OG parapsychologists, they were making connections between ghosts and OBEs a long time ago, that you can have an OBE and you can be seen as if you're a ghost, or you can have the experience where nobody's seeing you, but you're seeing them, which is like a ghost. You know, there's all these, I think there's definitely a connection there with both of them. And then that kind of calls into question what you see, whether you're in an OBE or you're in the body, seemingly in the body, and you're seeing what you think is an apparition. How do you know if they're a deceased person, unless you know them, or there's somebody who's alive, maybe sleeping, and they're having an OBE without knowing it, or they're having an OBE and they're conscious of it? So to go back to your question before about, do we have OBEs at night and not remember or not realize it? I think that's definitely the case. And a lot of people will say, you know, we go out of our bodies every night, you know, but I definitely think that's true. So one experience that I talk about, which this proved it for me, I don't expect anyone to believe it, but you can, you know, try it for yourself. I was at an OBE retreat for a week, and I was usually staying up in one of the rooms. It was this haunted mansion in Ireland, and I had a roommate. But I kept kind of waking up and like hearing strange noises, and I was kind of spooked to be in this big, big old haunted place. So I ended up sleeping downstairs in a sleeping bag among a bunch of other people in this, what used to be the ballroom. So it was completely packed. And we decided that night we were going to try and go out of body and find somebody else and exchange passwords. So when we first got there, we had to think of a password and not tell anyone, not write it down. And the first thing I thought was galantamine, because that's the substance I write about that the ancient Greeks used for memory. It's now used for dementia as well. But it's also used by lucid dreamers and astral projectors in the middle of the night, right before going back to sleep. And it's like rocket fuel. It can kind of like boost you into an alternate state. And I think what it's doing is it's probably just making you remember what is going to happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my thought. Okay, glantamine is my password. And then I thought, no, I'm going to change it to orange, because there's people here, English isn't their first language, it's a difficult password. So anyway, so a few nights later, so I'm in the ballroom and I go to sleep. I don't have an OBE, right? I don't have a dream. I don't remember anything from that night. And one girl that I befriended was sleeping next to me. In the morning, this woman who was amazing, she was a fruitarian. She looked 10 years younger than her age. And she says, okay, I had an out-of-body experience. I went downstairs. I went to the ballroom. And I saw Sam and this other woman. And they were sitting up talking to each other. I don't know still if she knew that I was sleeping there, or who I was sleeping next to. I'm not sure if she knew that we were physically there or not. But she goes, she said that she asked me for my password. Sorry. So I said the password was galantamine. It was Snowdrop, because that's what galantamine comes from. Snowdrop. So she goes, she says, I was sitting up awake and I told her it was like Snowdrur something. And she was from another country. English wasn't her first language. But yeah, she got that. And I was like, that's crazy. That's crazy. And it's also interesting that I apparently told her my first password, the one that I went with first, and not the one that I changed. And then the girl, she got the lady next to me, her password. She said, it's navel. And then she said, oh, mine was abdominals, because she was into exercise. Or it was the other way around, but it was the same meaning. And that lady remembered her experience. So they both remembered their OBE. And she remembered the meeting that they had. And she said, I saw a cartoon bumblebee around you. And she said, my password was B. So that just, I was like, that's so interesting. So basically, people could be having OBEs consciously talking to you, like Inception, like maybe getting your bank details or something, and you don't know.
we the great illusion may be that we are only here in the physical world, and that what is, I hope, will happen over the next few years is this great the intensity of change. And you know, we have a lot of climate change, we have tremendous technological change with AI and so forth, and just an enormous amount of economic, all this change results in changes in us. And if we do this right, one of the changes will be that we open the door to this other level of reality. And speaking of that, folks, in the last half hour of the show, we're going to explore doing just that with Samantha. We're going to start by talking about something that interests me greatly, and I think that will interest you a lot, the future Tokyo experiences, and our discussions with Riz Virk, one of the most incendiary and sweetest people in the world, a brilliant man. So those of you on the free side, thank you as always for coming and being with us on Dreamland.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Anne Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.